Hey, everybody, welcome to the Sports AHS podcast. I am Michael Florek here with a slightly different crew than we've had the last two weeks.
A little different.
Yeah, so there is the marvelous Matt Wixon over there.
Hey, thank you for calling me marvelous. That's
and
nice.
Rejoining us after a 2 week hiatus, Jumpin' Joe Hoyt.
Jumpin' Joe Hoyt. Wow. That's nice.
Is that a fallout from the basketball yesterday?
Oh, I was not there, but maybe.
Oh, we were bummed. We were looking forward to Matt's skills. We were kind of trying to predict what kind of basketball style he'd have.
Well, we did. I won the intramural championship, not just me. My team at Arizona, we won the intramural championship.
Oh, wow.
We were pretty good.
Did you get a t-shirt or something?
We got a t-shirt. It was always like, we got the cotton.
Yeah.
Stupid, but it meant something at the
time.
Yeah.
Yeah. The broomball t-shirts were very popular at Michigan's. Enough about our athletic achievements.
Glory days.
Yeah, let's go into what we're actually here to talk about, which is week 6 and week 7 of the Texas high school football season. Now, Matt, you were at kind of the game of the week there. Not even kind of, the game of the week.
Yeah,
Euless
as far
Trinity
as
for South Lake Carroll.
Whenever Carroll and Trinity play, it's a pretty big highlight. And the game played out a lot differently than I thought. I guess it probably played out a lot different than anybody thought, because for one half, nobody could stop anybody. And then the second half, it was, you know, a little more under control. But the thing that I left there with is Carroll has really improved. And that doesn't surprise me. They seem to every year. But, you know, their offense really kind of struggled early in the year when they played Tulsa Union and suffered their only loss. They looked really good against Trinity. Carroll does not have the amount of weapons they have had in recent years, especially last year with Lil Jordan Humphrey and Zach Farrar, but they know how to use them the right way. And Robert Barnes playing offense changes things a lot. Mm-hmm. He's still playing defense too. The guy must just be like smoked after at the end of each game. He's a really good player. But I was really impressed by Carroll.
Yeah, I mean, I picked Euless Trinity, so I thought they were kind of in that top tier with Allen and DeSoto, and I was really impressed with how South Lake Carroll did come out and kind of take control of the game there in the second half. Would you put them in that top tier with Allen, DeSoto, and kind of nobody else right now?
Right. I think they would certainly be competitive in that game. I think they could be competitive with anyone with the way they played. Now, speaking of Trinity, I mean, they really struggled. They were very one-dimensional in that game. They completed a nice pass early in the game, but they just couldn't do it to keep Carroll somewhat honest in the second half, and Carroll came after them and was not fooled by the play-action fakes, which are really good. Trinity always executes them really well. But I think, you know, I've seen both Allen and DeSoto, and I think they're clearly the top two in the area. But Carroll is the kind of team I would not want to face in the playoffs. They're going to be really solid. They're getting better. And if you make any mistakes, Carroll's going to beat you.
Joe, you were at Sachse, Garland Lake Bicentennial.
Mm-hmm.
What did you kind of see? A big game there in that district, kind of for the district, kind of, I guess there's Rowlett as well, but
sure.
For the district, kind of top tier.
Yeah, Lakeview's really good, and Cameron Fields is awesome. They're a little bit limited in regards to weapons. I think one of their big receivers was out. But Sachse is really, really good, and that's kind of the big takeaway I took from it. Their defense is fast. Rico Jeffers was all over the field, and, you know, he's a 3-star recruit as well. And then Jalen Maiden, you know, just he was, you know, he's fast, he's got the arm. You know, in the second half, the first half they were kind of struggling to throw the ball. Lakeview was really kind of loading up the box, and or not loading up the box, they were kind of, you know, daring him to throw and kind of sitting back. And then Jalen basically took over in the second half, running the ball, finished with like 190 yards rushing and a huge 58-yard touchdown that kind of separated the game. So Sachse was really good, and they really impressed
me. The Sachse fans let me know about being the one person who picked Lakeview.
Yeah.
I saw that. Yeah. Mama Maiden tweeted that.
Yeah, that's funny. But as I've been a big Sachse supporter over the years, so I think they had the chance to get me. And I was really impressed by Lakeview, and I thought Lakeview could give them a good game. And it was a pretty good game for most of the way. But Sachse, you mentioned defense. That's it. When Sachse can play some defense, they can get really scary, because they're always going to be able to move the ball.
Mm-hmm. I think it kind of going into the year, it kind of looked like Sachse might be down from the heights they had reached, just because they were without kind of the same amount of talent the Duvernay twins had graduated, that kind of stuff. So to come back and really kind of assert themselves in this game really kind of showed me something, showed me kind of maybe I was a little down on them too much for the beginning of the year. Now, they still got to play Rowlett, which should be one of the
that looks like the decider.
Yeah, should be one of the best games we see kind of here in that this second half. Now, I was at Louisville Flower Mound Marcus, and Louisville kind of just took control of the game right away. Tyrell Shavers had a touchdown catch, and they go up 7-0.
Turn up.
Yeah, and Alabama commit, and they get a pick six right before the half, and it's just a rout. Louisville's first win in 10 years over Flower Mound Marcus, the Battle of the Axe, and they were going nuts.
As they should.
They were going nuts. Yeah, so the student section was going crazy. The players were running on the field, just doing victory lap with the Axe. My favorite moment came. Some offensive linemen just went and laid on the field on their back for no particular reason, but it made sense. But Louisville is interesting because they are fast. I kind of went into that game expecting, Tyrell Shavers and everybody else, but they do have some talent there. Now, they got to play South Lake Carroll next week, or this week, I guess I should say, and that should be kind of a good barometer for where they could really be at this point.
Yeah, but I mean, Marcus beat Mansfield a couple of weeks ago, and yeah. I thought that was if you wanted to be marked as legitimate, that was a really good victory. And then just the way Louisville took apart Marcus, and, obviously that was not a big week for Marcus. It was a down week, but still to win with that convincing, or with that in that convincing fashion, that shows some.
Yeah, I think Marcus just didn't have the speed that Louisville had. A lot of runs just kind of outside, or a lot of swing passes that Louisville was kind of able to break out. Other than that, I mean, just what did you guys see from this week? What were your takeaways here?
Well, for Louisville, didn't they? They did a good job of handling Justin Dinka. Yes. I believe his name is their running back, right?
Yeah.
He was leading DFW in 6A in rushing yards or something like that. So that was pretty impressive too from that game.
I would say another one that was big was Frisco Lone Star beating Frisco. Mm-hmm. Frisco was the only team that beat Lone Star last year in district play, and I think Frisco is probably, arguably the most physical team in that district in the Frisco ISD. They got the two offensive linemen going to Tech, and Lone Star is not particularly big up front, offensive line or defensive line, but they held up well. Jason Shelley made some big plays, and that was a big win for Lone Star.
I also can't believe that Cedar Hill mounted another second comeback of the season. Coming back against Duncanville. When I saw the score originally, I was impressed that Duncanville was beating them as badly as they were. But for Cedar Hill to come back again and Avery Davis, quarterback going to Notre Dame to kind of, lead them back, that was really impressive to
me.
Yeah,
actually, I had somebody in the press box said, yep, Duncanville did it. They finished it off. And I was writing notes about it. Like, I'm like, oh, I'm going to mention that. And then I look at it, I click it again, and I'm like, wait a second. That's unless we have the score backward. And it wasn't. Cedar Hill came back and won that game.
Yeah, down 20 points there, and then they mount another kind of last-second comeback there. How do you look at Cedar Hill after two kind of comebacks, two losses to very good teams? But do you penalize them for how they're winning these games?
Well, I go by just what I've seen from them, and the big thing that, of course, this was against DeSoto, and I saw them against Bishop Gorman. Mm-hmm. So those are two really good teams I'm judging them by. But the big thing that I found is Cedar Hill struggles to run the ball. They've been, and that makes things tough for them. And I don't know what happened exactly against Duncanville, but against DeSoto, they could not establish the run, and it puts a lot of pressure on Avery Davis to just make a lot of plays because they're coming after him when he goes back to pass. And that's one of the things that just from my eye watching from the press box or whatever has seen this year, that Cedar Hill can be really physical, and they can take over games and run hard. They've had guys like Aka Cedric Ware. Mm-hmm. But right now, maybe that offensive line is still kind of molding into form, and maybe they'll get there. We'll just have to see.
I think they're hard to really kind of measure because, they're essentially two drives of two different games away from having only one win.
Yeah.
And, and the other two losses they had came against, like you said, Gorman and DeSoto. So I think they're a really hard team to kind of get a hold of. But Avery Davis, like you said, if you have to put it on one guy, I think it's not that bad to put it on Avery Davis.
Right.
Yeah, I think you can look at it one or two different ways here. On one end, they're not playing their best. They should be beating these teams before the final seconds. On the other hand, good teams win close games. Good teams can come back. So I guess it kind of just depends on however you want to look at it. I would tend to lean towards the latter. I always mix up the former and the latter.
Former
latter. Yeah, I would lean towards the latter because I just believe in their talent and that kind of stuff. But yeah, a lot to kind of digest here, and a lot to look forward to next week. But we got a little. We're gonna switch it up a little bit. Usually we talk to a coach at this point, but we just released our big sort of helmet series. And there's a lot to kind of go through, a lot to break down. So we're going to welcome in Greg Riddle right now, who also reported on this story with us. And we're going to kind of give you some cliff notes so you can go and read the story.
Yes, please
at
go
Sports
read the
AHS.
Story.
Yeah, read the story, share the story, believe in the story, because we believe in you. And let's bring in Greg Riddle right now. Hey, Greg Riddle, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing well. Doing well. Now, you join us because you wrote a large portion of this story. But let's start for the beginning. There's a four-part story. There's also a bunch of data. You can look up where your school kind of ranks in terms of how their quality of helmets and their concussions and that kind of stuff. So go to Sports AHS, check it out. But Matt, you wrote kind of the beginning of the story and just kind of breaking down how helmets really, they're limited in how much they can prevent concussions, that kind of stuff. Just what were your kind of biggest takeaways from talking to these medical professionals and just everyone you did talk to?
Well, I think the first thing is, you know, we're kind of really close to this situation, so we see it year in, year out. Maybe we are not surprised when we hear, well, you know, a helmet really can't protect you that well, but I think there's still a lot of people out there that think that helmet can protect people, and that's why we kind of had to start with that, you know, kind of put out there in the landscape mm-hmm. what people think. The big thing that I took away from it was learning about linear and rotational acceleration. You know, that linear acceleration where it's the direct line hit into the helmet, and helmets are a lot better at that now, at absorbing that. But the rotational, what the neurologists say, well, that's the really dangerous part of concussions, and that's where the head, like, turns when it's getting hit, and the skull can, the brain can twist within the skull. I mean, I knew a little bit about that. But talking to these neurologists and having them dumb it down for me, obviously, because, mm-hmm. man, they can really, explain it. That's so huge, and it seems like it's such a challenge for helmets to try to, you know, to reduce that. I mean, the engineering of a helmet is almost like you have to completely reconfigure how you do the helmet to make it work.
Do you have less faith in, like, how the helmets now or more? Or did it change at all?
I would say that I've been very skeptical about how much a helmet can do over the last few years, and that's just because of all the research and stuff that I've seen coming out there. But at the same time, I'm very optimistic after talking with these people Dr. Hunt Bacher with the NFL Head, Neck, and Spine Committee, he says he thinks he's going to see dramatic changes in helmets mm-hmm. in the next 5 years. And when I mentioned, you know, I've always been skeptical about how a helmet can protect people, but I'm also very happy that I've seen over the last 5 years the way the way concussions have been handled by the schools, and that mm-hmm. things have changed dramatically. You know, the players are bigger, faster, stronger, and all that now, and that's a problem because the impacts are bigger. But I think that it is much more serious now than it was just 5 years ago.
Yeah, and I think that was kind of one of the surprising things that we just found overall in this story and reporting it is, I think we went into it expecting some schools to be really good and some schools to have some older helmets or lesser quality helmets. But we found pretty much throughout the board that, I mean, helmet quality was good to very good.
Right.
And the reconditioning of the helmets when they send them off and get them repaired another year, that was really good. The biggest thing for me, and I wrote about kind of the reconditioning and that kind of stuff, is there's a law in Texas, but it's just so outdated that it doesn't make any sense. Basically, the law says you can't have a helmet older than 16 years, and you have to get it reconditioned once every 2 years, once it's 10 years old. Now, reconditioners won't accept helmets 10 years or older. So this law
doesn't even work.
Yeah, it doesn't really mean anything here, but I guess it's still on the books, and talking with the UIL, they said, I mean, anecdotally, maybe they don't have any sort of research on whether this has helped or stemmed older helmets from getting through and squeaking through the cracks. But It seems like there should be some sort of kind of update there, and that's kind of what I go into in my story. On the other end, there's the concussion reporting, and there's some stuff that kind of came out this weekend. But, Greg, just what did you kind of figure out in terms of how the UIL records their injuries, especially concussions, compared to TAPS, and kind of how that whole group or those groups do all that?
Well, it sounds like the UIL is about to make some big changes that I think will really help. Up until now, all they've required is that the school that's the district chair report injuries during the regular season for football and just for their school, not for every school in their district. So they're getting a very limited amount of data reported to them, which I think we showed in our story, just the wide gap between the numbers they got for concussions and what we got. And we looked at 100 fewer schools than they had report to them. So I think once they start this registry that they're hoping to make mandatory possibly as early as next year, I think that'll really help supply concussion numbers and for other injuries as well from the entire state, not just a very small sampling that they're receiving right now. And it sounds like with them partnering with UT Southwestern, I think they'll be able to provide a lot of good analysis for the data they receive, and that'll help the UIL make decisions going forward with their rules and how, if they decide to, I don't know, whatever they decide to do with contact practices going forward, if they'll change anything with that, and if they make any other rule changes.
Yeah, that was one of the big things that kind of came out of the UIL Medical Advisory Committee meeting this weekend, is their registry in partnership with UT Southwestern to track concussions and kind of figure out how schools are treating concussions and whether they can standardize care. That's ready to go. They're just waiting on some final agreements here. But as Greg said, it could be ready. It could be mandatory as soon as next football season. So it should come out here soon. Now, Greg, you also looked at kind of the future of helmets. Talked with old Roger Staubach there. What was kind of your biggest impression of talking with him and learning about his kind of concussion history and what he's doing now?
First of all, I want to thank Mr. Staubach for taking the time to let us come and talk to him at his house and take some photos with his old helmets. It was pretty amazing to see a replica of the leather helmet that he wore back in high school, and the fact that he said he only got one concussion in that leather helmet.
People didn't go after people with their heads as much in those leather helmets.
But then he did talk about the concussions he got when he was with the Cowboys and in college, and he said concussions played a part in him deciding to retire. He met with a doctor after he was done playing, but before he decided to officially retire, and he was told that if he kept playing, concussions could continue to become easier for him to get. And that's one reason he decided to retire when he did, even though the Cowboys wanted him to play for another couple of years and offered him that chance. But I think a lot of progress is being made with helmet innovations. Mm-hmm. And Mr. Staubach, he's one of the investors for Visus, which is a new helmet scheduled to launch its debut helmet later this year. And that's a pretty dramatic difference in what their helmet's going to look like compared to what we've seen in traditional helmets up until now. And instead of the hard outer shell, they're going with a softer outer shell that they said you can actually indent with your thumb if you press hard enough. Mm-hmm. So it will be very interesting to see how many teams wear that helmet. I know a lot of them are going to try it out. For now, it's just a college and NFL helmet. Mm-hmm. They hope to come out with a cheaper one that'll be more for high school and youth athletes. Hopefully, they're targeting 2017 for that one. But it will be interesting to see if that their design works and if it'll help reduce concussions, which they think it will. But I think them, Zenith, Shutt, Rydell, they're all trying different innovations to reduce the risk of concussions. They all admit that no helmet's going to prevent concussions completely, but they think that trying different innovations, I know a lot of them, Shutt and Rydell, they've tried impact sensors. Some you can place inside the helmet. Some you can place in the chin strap or the chin guard. They're hoping that'll help them know about impacts on the field that go beyond the normal impact amount, I guess. So I think all these companies are trying different things. So it'll be interesting to see going forward if that helps reduce the number of concussions that we're seeing around football.
Yeah, I think when you talk about the future, there's a couple things I got cut from the story that I thought were actually interesting. So I talked with the Virginia Tech researcher. The Virginia Tech does the helmet ratings from, they give them 1 to 5 stars. And he basically said, yeah, like in their current form, 5-star helmets, that's about as good as protection as you're going to get. Like there's not much more to go from there. And then in talking with Dr. Hunt Bacher, who Matt mentioned before, chair of the head, neck, and spine committee at the combine last year, he got his committee, I should say, got all the helmet manufacturers in one room. And basically, they tried to brainstorm how to make a better helmet. And Bacher wasn't very happy with how that meeting came out. So what he did, he started looking at universities. He started going to engineering kind of programs and that kind of stuff. So when you look at the future, I think helmets will look or act completely different in the future as compared to now. I think they might look different, whether it's, as Greg said, you can press in on them. But I just, where do you guys see the future of these helmets going? Or I think there's also some sort of movement to just get rid of helmets, and that takes away the head. So where do you guys see it going?
Well, I think it's got to go some. I mean, the protecting the head is the biggest challenge to football right now. We were mentioning those Vices helmets. I mean, I think those are going to be, what, $1,500 initially for pro and college?
Yeah, for the pro and the college one.
It'll be, you know, can they get it down, if it's successful, of course, can they get it down to a price point where school districts make it, where it's feasible for them? Because I could see a day where a school district, and I mean this, I understand this is like crazy to think of this in Texas, but I could think of a day in Texas when a school district decides football is too expensive for us. You know, we have to serve all these students, and it's not affordable enough, if that's the problem with the helmets. But I think it's the biggest challenge that's facing football right now. You've got youth participation that's dipped a bit, and that's because of parental concerns over safety, whether they're all justified or not. I mean, it's happening.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think there's going to have to be a pretty dramatic change in football, the helmets, to make it work, to make the sport work in the future.
One thing I found interesting is that a lot of the companies and the doctors talked about how they may customize the helmets both for age level and also for position, so you could see linemen wearing much different helmets than a receiver would wear. So I think it'll be interesting to see if that does happen, and if so, how much of an impact that makes on reducing the risk of concussions.
Yeah,
the price point is a good kind of point to make there, because yeah, you have these high schools, especially if you look at the smaller high schools, the 2As. That would be kind of the first step for them to kind of figure out, okay, is this worth it? So just a lot to sort of think about. Go to Sports AHS, read the full stories. There's a lot of good info in there. As I mentioned, we got a whole kind of data collection system in there, so you can type in your school. You can see how many concussions that school has reported. You can see the helmet models, the makes, the quality, whether they're 5-star, 4-star. So go check all that out at sportsahs.com. And thanks for reading, Greg. Thank you for joining us.
You're more than welcome.
Anything else you want to mention about Roger Staubach?
He's a cool dude.
All right. That's
go.
A very good consensus. Yeah.
There
I think
you
everyone
go.
Thinks that.
Well, let's just go into the game that swept the nation and then died out and is coming back.
It's now back sweeping the
nation.
There's
a resurgence here.
The Cedar Hill of games, we are coming back.
Yeah, there's a resurgence. It's nobody believes in this game. Now, Joe has been absent for 2 weeks here, so he's missed out on some scoring. So after Matt just rolled his eyes. But
it's my phone. It just keeps ringing.
Oh, okay. Sorry. We went 0-3 last week. Avi was here, Avi Zalin. You might remember him from previous podcasts. We also had a Lost podcast. I screwed it up, so the podcast actually didn't come out, but we did record it.
Mm-hmm.
Just technical difficulties, and I picked Parish Episcopal. They lost to Prestonwood. Matt, you picked Frisco, which was the best pick of the week. They
right.
nearly pulled out the upset over Frisco Lone Star. And then Avi picked LD Bell, and they lost. So no change here. Now the points remain me with two. Matt has one. Avi has one. Joe, who has been absent, coming up.
It's kind of unfair.
Zero.
You should get a few more at-bats here. Before.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, really a chance for Joe to make his move here. But, Matt, who are you going with this week?
I'm going to go with Louisville. Now, I just saw South Lake Carroll look really impressive against Trinity, and so I'm not sure if Louisville can win this game, but I think Louisville is a perfect example of the nobody believes in this game, mm-hmm. because if you look at this, there are going to be few people who think they can play with South Lake Carroll in this game. But I like Louisville. We were talking earlier, they got a lot of speed. I think that's going to be difficult for Carroll to contain. You know, they're a little more balanced than Euless mm-hmm. Trinity because they can pass and they can run. I do think Carroll's going to win this game, but I think it's going to be a close game, and I think Louisville's got a real shot.
I like the pick. You got Alabama commit Tyrell Shavers. He went up against Iowa commit Matt Hankins last week of Flowerman Marcus. This week, Robert Barnes plays safety South Lake Carroll. OU commit, another big kind of receiver secondary matchup. Louisville, after that game, they really were excited. The PA announcer announced the score. South Lake Carroll won. They were celebrating because they had lost to Euless Trinity, but they get to play South Lake Carroll. So I think they believe in themselves, but as you said, I don't think many outside of that room believes in them. So that's a strong pick. Like
right.
sometimes we have some like that are on the borderlines, but that's a big pick. Joe, who are you going with?
Well, before my pick, I think I want to give a kind of proposal here. What
okay.
if because of this pick and since I've missed the last 2 weeks that this pick counts for like two extra points.
Oh,
it's
okay.
a double down. Okay.
Okay.
Sure.
Yeah. So if you pick them and they win, you get 2 points. If you pick them in the paper, that will be the double to 4 points.
Mm. So I could take the lead here is basically what's
yeah.
You could, yes.
Grand slam it right here.
Yeah.
Four runner.
And I'm putting all that stake in Lake Highlands. Lake Highlands against Coppell is that nobody believes in us. I'm going with Lake Highlands. They lost to Louisville only by 4 earlier this year. They're coming off a 35-7 loss to Skyline. So I'm thinking a big bounce-back game here for Lake Highlands against Coppell.
All right.
Yeah, that is another strong pick. That would really shake up the district, too, which would be fun.
It would.
And yeah, so that would be that is very strong. That might be the strongest sort of gamble we've made this year. I am going to pick Arlington over Arlington Lamar. Arlington Lamar 5-1 now, 4-1, something like that. But really just strong throughout. They've lost to Keller Fossil Ridge, but that's about it. Arlington, I've liked Arlington all season. They've been up and down. They nearly beat South Grand Prairie. They've had a couple near misses.
Beat Plano East.
They
pretty
beat
good.
Plano East. I just kind of like what they have. They got a lot of experience. So I'm going to pick them. And I always go for the double, so I'll pick them
in the paper
as well.
All right.
So there are our picks. I asked Avi if he wanted to do a pick, but he got distracted and didn't pick. So
I think he was busy having lunch.
Yeah.
So
So he's gonna have to sit out this week. Elsewhere, just around the Metroplex, Matt, you mentioned South Lake Carroll, Louisville. There's also Lancaster Mansfield Summit, which is a big game in District 10-5A. Obviously, Lancaster and Waxahachie looking for that district title. Mansfield Summit, 0-2 in the district, and they have already lost to Lake Ridge, and Legacy and Timberview play each other. So one of those teams is going to win. So if Mansfield Summit loses this game, they're going to be 2-3 games behind in search of a playoff spot. So
everything in that district feels like a must win for many teams, you know, I mean, and especially in this case, Summit. Yeah, I don't think you can get out of that 0-3 hole.
Do you think that will affect the game here?
Well, I think anytime a team plays with some desperation, it's usually a good thing. I still think Lancaster's going to win this game, but it's going to be Summit. They're not going to fold. If we're kind of going there, they're not going to give up on the season. And if they beat Lancaster, they suddenly jump right back into the the thick of it.
Oh yeah, for sure. Joe, Skyline Jesuit, you're going to be at that game. Just what are you expecting there?
Well, I think those are two. I mean, if you know, after the out of district schedule, those are two teams that were hadn't won and are now both 2-0 in conference and ahead of the district. So I mean, it's kind of a district championship preview possibly between two teams that didn't win out of district. So I think it's a pretty interesting game with a lot of storylines. Jacob Polish is back, so I'm kind of curious to see how Skyline is, maybe finding their rhythm, kind of moving forward here with Polish back in the fold. So we'll see.
Yeah, yeah. He was out, Jesuit quarterback, by the way. He was out first. He got injured the first game, sat out until district play started, really. And then they come out, they beat Coppell in that district opener. They're 2-0 now. If they win that game, they've got kind of the inside track to that district.
It's not just the inside track. They're like on the tractor beam being pulled in, just sit back.
They're taking the autobahn.
And not to say that, there aren't other teams that can win games in that district, but it appears to be a very top-heavy district, and they would have played the part of the top that we were expecting. So
yeah. Now, I mean, if Joe's gamble
that's true.
Yeah. Joe's gamble kind of comes to fruition here. Lake Highlands beats Coppell, then we got to start thinking about Lake Highlands. But Jesuit would still rise above that. Now, if Skyline can come out, that would be just chaos in that district. So a lot to look forward to there. I'm going to be at South Lake Carroll Lewisville. We talked about that game a lot. So I just think that it would be kind of – I mean, this is kind of the – if Lewisville wins, it's probably the biggest win in that program's history in a long time. So that's kind of – and they're riding high off the rivalry game. So – this should be interesting to see if they can put up a fight or if they can even make Matt look smart and win the game there. So
it's a colossal challenge to make me look smart. So so I hope you're up to it. Yeah.
Elsewhere, you guys looking at anything else?
Every week I look at my numbers is 11-6A, right? The Mesquite Horn and Mesquite and Rockwall. I just think that that is a topsy-turvy district, and North Mesquite got a nice win last week. And I think each week you feel a little differently about what's going on in there. Because, Rockwall Heath beat Rockwall 2 weeks ago, and they were like, oh, yeah, here we are. And then North Mesquite gets back Jacquez Gooch, and they roll Rockwall Heath.
Yeah, the Gooch is loose again. Yeah, that district is really interesting. As you said, Matt, Rockwall Heath, big win. They enter our area rankings. Then they drop out. Now North Mesquite's getting some votes. So it will be kind of like that middle section is really going to be interesting, especially as we get towards playoff time here. Joe, you looking at anything else?
Yeah, I'm also looking at Mansfield and Arlington Martin. I'm still kind of figuring out who Arlington Martin is. And then Mansfield had a big win against Arlington last week. Kennedy Brooks just committed to Oklahoma. So now we know where he's going. We'll see how he does in his first game since committing. So I think that has a game for some potential storylines to kind of come out of as well.
Yeah, that's also a kind of crowded district there with Bowie and Lamar and Arlington and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So a lot to look at. And now, I mean, we're more than halfway. Once we get to week 7 here, we're more than halfway through it. Or I guess we already are more than halfway through, 11 weeks in the season. That's how good I am at math. But so a lot to look forward to and a lot to kind of start to look towards playoffs and Division One, Division Two, and district championships and all that kind of stuff. So go to sportsahs.com. We'll keep you abreast on all that kind of stuff. At SportsAHS on Twitter, Instagram, SportsAHS, snapping. Why not? SportsAHS, at us. There's been some good snaps that you guys are missing out on. So check it out. Go to iTunes, give us 5 stars. And tell us you're nobody believes in this team.
Right.
Figure out. Yeah.
Tweet us.
Yeah, you can play the game too. And with that, for Matt, for Joe, for me, we'll see you Friday night.